doing it?
Good. Just come do my mail. And let's come bring in my, I'm doing laundry, so I should come to pick up some mail, I think. 75.
75?
Yeah. I think I have quite a bit of mail, probably. Let's keep working on this podcast since I got it, guys. What's up? I was just recording my interaction with my favorite lady in the office. I love that lady. I forgot her name. She's super cool. She's not the other one's the mean one, but that's the cool one here at Bridgewater Apartments. So I got a lot of cool stuff, guys. We'll see what I got. Got some pretty con. I like how they try to make it look official, like, ooh, this is going to be pretty cool. Ooh, this is a check. It's like for a home furnishing place. I'm like, that's not what I want. So, we're doing laundry. In between laundry, guys, we're going to throw in some little tidbits, some little fun stuff for the podcast here. So, again, it's the start of my weekend, so I get to kind of do a few things. So, I'm excited, guys. I'm going to get my car back finally. Holy cow, I feel like it's been forever, so may not be the Saturn that I bought originally from the other auction, I guess the previous podcast, but now my dad's in town from Oregon, so he is hooking me up with a 4Runner, a 96 4Runner, which would be kind of cool, but before that, he's also going to teach me how to drive stick, which I know, pretty embarrassing as a almost 40-year-old adult, I don't know how to drive stick, man, it's pretty embarrassing, like, I think there's some World War II veterans laughing at me. Like, you don't know how to drive a stick? You're a wuss. You should know how to drive a stick. Real people know how to drive sticks. I feel like that's what's going to be happening. So yeah, I just want to give you guys a little update. So that's what's going on. So do laundry. Got to interact with my favorite lady in the front office there. And then my favorite maintenance guy. And then now, I'm just kind of hanging out waiting for my laundry. So about half an hour, so we're going to kind of do a little, this kind of a little beginning rambling part, and then we're going to work on the, finally, let's get to the story. I know you guys have been waiting for, so we're going to get to that in a moment. And again, also, what's the shout out to State Farm. I'm Adam Gentry in their office out there in Gilbert. They've been hooking me up the last few months, in almost a year, I think, or over a year, with my insurance. So if you guys need great coverage with really great affordable rates, check him out. Check out State Farm, too. They do a great job. Not a sponsor segment yet. Hopefully they would want to sponsor this, but we'll see. Then I got to move up the charts, man. You know, you got to become famous before you get all those big sponsors. So just want to give them a quick shout out. And again, appreciate all the hard work that they do for me, covering my car. And they can do that for you, too. So check them out. If you get a chance, State Farm. This is an unofficial plug for them. And again, we'll get to the good stuff here in just a brief moment. This is the Great Weight Podcast, and I am the Great Weight, Scott Waite. So there we go. It started long ago. It started long before either you or I were here, and will continue long before after you and I are long gone. He didn't know how it would come to this. Didn't even know why it would come to this. All he knew is that it came to this and the choice was made for him. John was never a reactionary type. He was more of an action-oriented guy. He was someone, when the cards were on the table, he played his best hand. Whether he won, whether he lost, he always, came out the other end unscathed, unharmed, and always a little better. That was until she walked into his life. He wasn't expecting her, and I'm sure she wasn't expecting him. But when their eyes locked, it was love at first sight. Cupid's arrow must have hit him pretty hard because he felt the room spin, and he saw stars. Little twinkly stars that you see lighting up the very dark skyline. He knew that she was the one for him, and that she was the one for him, and that he was one for her. So John stumbled out of his seat, hands shuffling in his pockets, very nervous. He didn't know quite what to say. He was fumbling for words. He was fumbling for the right thing to tell her. And so he slowly cleared his throat and went with what he thought would be the best opener. And that was, "Hi, my name's John Thompson. What's your name?" And as she batted her bangs from her eyes, she said, "My name is Tiffany with an I." And so the romance began. John and Tiffany spent what felt like days, but was only hours, in that small coffee shop in their small town, on that quiet, calm, cloudy day. And their town didn't quite feel so small afterwards. It didn't feel as big as maybe the bigger cities, the metropolises nearby, but it felt big to them. And they continued to get to know each other. Every afternoon they would meet at the same coffee shop, at that same small table where their eyes locked just recently, just days ago. And they kept talking and talking, and little by little got to know each other more and more. He found out that she came from a military family that was always moving. It didn't seem like she was in one place more than a week at a time, maybe a month. He was so infatuated that he forgot all the small details in the beginning.
and her fell in love with his story, how he came from humble beginnings, how he came from the local family of miners that were digging for coal and for all the minerals that helped keep the town afloat and kept the town, you know, thriving, as little as it did. You know, when you're in a small town, there's not much there to do other than, you know, pick fights, find a pick, get to work, or just pick up and leave. And so he knew that the options were slim. She knew the options were slim, but their love, forged like steel, kept going stronger and stronger. That was until the day of the accident. It was unexpected. No one saw it coming. And who would have thought something so little would have caused such a great controversy, such a big uproar in such a small city. And that would lead to one of them, you know, making the ultimate sacrifice. And so that is where the story begins. And I will tell you the story of how John met Tiffany, how they fell in love, what ended up happening that caused not only a rift between them, but to almost break out a civil war between their families and disrupt a small city town. And so let the story begin. This is how the story begins. On a cloudy day in the middle of November, Jonathan Quincy Thompson was lost. He was in a deep depression, a deep struggle, had been for quite some time. He didn't know what to do. Grown up as a miner, in the mining community of Colesville, West Virginia, there wasn't much to do in a small town. His grandpa was a miner. His dad was a miner. His three older brothers were miners. His two older sisters were accounting for the big mining company. Everything ran through the coal industry. And if they're lucky, they could, you know, maybe make some money on the side, you know, compressing those into diamonds and selling those to the local diamond dealers. But for over 65 years, his family had grown into being the biggest family in the mining community in Colesville. And so for John, you know, he decided one day, woke up, he didn't feel like he wanted to be a miner anymore. He wanted to be something major. Pun intended. And so he just felt like he couldn't do anymore. So he tried to talk to his mom and his dad, his older siblings, and he always had the same answer. John, we're a mining family. That's all we know. You know, we pick up the axe, we go to the shafts, we bring home the coal, we bring home the dough, we bring home the money. That's how we are. That's who we are, and who we always will be, you know, until this coal mining, until we run out of coal, until we run out of the, you know, things the mine in the shafts. But John knew that he was better than that. He knew he was bigger. He had bigger ambitions. He had bigger dreams. He wanted to get far, far away from Colesville. He wanted to get far away from West Virginia. He wanted to go to New York City. He dreamt of being a playwright. In terms of writing, you know, great Broadway plays. That would be, you know, his words coming out of the mouths of the famous actors that he would see on TV. The ones that would do Broadway plays on the summertime that he would read about in those fancy periodicals for the Hollywood types. The Hollywood Reporter, Variety, Billboard, The Grudge Report. The different, you know, places that he knew where. So every night he would dream, and he always would dream the same dream, that he was sitting middle row, fourth row up, middle seats, at the Eugene O'Neill Theater in Broadway. And hearing his words spoken by his favorite actor. and his favorite actor saying those words of his. And at the very end of the show, flowers flying, roses flying, daffodils flying, every known flower flying onto the stage, the actors bowing humbly as they're being serenaded with flowers and petals, and you know, the crowd erupting in applause, standing ovations, and with tears coming out, she's knowing that those were his words being spoken beautifully, eloquently by those Broadway actors. And then every morning at 5 o'clock sharp, you'd hear the cock-a-doodle-doo, cock-a-doodle-doo, doodle-doo, the rooster crowing, and then having to grudgingly wake up, pick himself up, pick up the pieces of shattered dreams, put on his heavy steel-toe boots that felt like anvils, felt like 50-pound anvils on each foot, and struggling to make those steps into his pickup truck, the tow truck, the family truck that towed everybody, all 8 of them, even Grandpa Tony, struggling, all 8 of them. And in that snow, especially the wintertime, the snow, when it would pour down, it felt like acid on his skin, burning him, knowing that he was further and further away from his dreams, further from what he really wanted, until that one day in mid-November when it happened. He didn't expect it. It wasn't something he planned. In fact, it had rarely happened. In the 150 years of the plant's existence, where they've been shafting, it had happened only once, only twice. And so for him, he knew it, didn't know if it was a miracle. He didn't know if it was meant to be, but it was something that did happen. And it was the accident that not only changed his life, but would set in motion a lot of great things that would come his way, or so he thought. And so, after coming from the doctors, he went to the local coffee shop, the small coffee shop. Not too many people were there. And very rarely was it crowded. Occasionally, you know, if you know the governor or somebody was coming in, you know, on their way into, you know, somewhere else, they would come by, but never a big crowd. And so he decided to sit down. So he ordered a cup of Joe, you know, nothing fancy, black, a little bit of cream, a little bit of sugar. And while he was stirring it, you know, and stirring up emotions, knowing that he may never get back to work again, that he would never be a miner, that maybe this should be the end, she walked in, all beautiful, 5'2", curly brown hair, eyes like sapphires, that just, when he saw them, they pierced him into his soul, pierced him, gave him a feeling that he hadn't felt for a long time. Not since he had seen that movie, that beautiful actress and her blue eyes. And then he felt it. He didn't know what it was. He didn't know that bubbly feeling in his heart. He felt it bubbling. He felt something. He felt alive for the first time in his 28 years. He felt alive. He felt renewed. He felt energized. And he's like, I have to talk to her. I need to. She came in, and as she brushed her hair, you know, from her eyes, and she looked over and saw him, and she smiled. A friendly smile, you know, not a flirtatious, just a friendly, warm, hi smile. And as she ordered her coffee and was waiting, that is when he decided to make his move. The butterflies, you know, come accumulating in his stomach, like a tornado of emotions. He came up to and introduced himself. He said, "Hi, my name is Joe. What's your name?" He stumbled, and she said, "Hi, my name's Tiffany. I'm new in town. My family just moved in here. You know, and we, you know, we're trying to get our bearings together. This is a small town. We're not used to such a small town. Does your family live here?" And as he thought for a moment, he said, "Yes, yes." And so he said, "Oh, that's great." And he said, "Hey, would you like to come join me?" And she's like, "Sure." And so as they sat there and they talked and talked, and they got to know each other, and what seemed like minutes was hours, to the point where the barista politely, you know, said, "Hi, closing time, 5 minutes, closing time, 5 minutes." They hadn't realized the sun had set. It had now gotten dusk, and in such a small town as Colesville, you don't have many streetlights. As it was dimly lit outside, he said, I've enjoyed our conversation. Can I get your number and maybe call you sometime?" And she's like, "Yes, sure." And so she gave him her number. And he's excited. He's like, "Do you need me to walk you home?" And she's like, "No, I'm right here. My car's fine." And so, well, he's like, "At least let me walk you to your car. You know, that's what a gentleman would do." And so he walked her to her car. And as he opened her door and made sure that she got in, he said, "Thank you so much for talking to me. I needed it." And she's like, "Likewise, thank you for talking to me. And I look forward to us, you know, talking soon." And he's like, "What are you doing tomorrow?" And she's like, "Not sure." He's like, "Well, hey, maybe we can make this a thing. Maybe you and I can have coffee or just sit down and chat in the cafe. You know, you want to do it again, same time?" And she's like, "Sure." And so he knew right then and there that she could be the one for him. And so the very next day, Joe woke up excited. For the first time in a lifetime, it felt like he was energized. He was invigorated. He's like, "Today's my day. I get to speak to Tiffany." Everything seemed to go smoother, happier. He was smiling ear to ear. His family noticed it too. It's like, "What's gotten into Joe? He's a lot, you know, happier than he used to be. You know, this, I haven't seen him happy like this since his first day working in the coal mines. Now he's happy again." And so he's like, I can't tell you guys, it's a secret, but I'm happy. The happiest I've been in quite a while." And so as he got back from his rehabilitation and made his way to the cafe, there she was, looking even prettier than she did before. He didn't know how that was possible. She looked even prettier, even more beautiful in her blue jeans and her nice long white sleeve shirt, looking conservative, looking like the belle of the ball. You know, he could see the few other guys kind of looking at her. And when she saw him, she got up, ran to him, gave him a big hug. It's like, "Oh, you're here, you're here. You made it like you promised. I wasn't sure you're going to make it. I was worried. Plus, all these guys kept staring at me. I was nervous. I didn't know what to do." He's like, "I'm here." And so they sat down. And again, what felt like minutes was hours. And again, they closed down the coffee shop just like the day before. And again, he said, "Hey, when can I see you again?" And he's like, "And then maybe we can make this a date." And as the dogs barked in the background on their way out there, she's like, "I would love to do something. Maybe you can show me around Friday." He's like, "Absolutely." And so he is excited. He marked Friday. They're going to go out on the town, do a little dancing, go to a little country bar where everyone would, on Friday nights, learn to two-step and then dance the night away, dance their weekends away. And so he was excited. He woke up very, very excited. And so Friday came and he woke up. He's like, got out of bed, again, wide smile, his family noticed the difference. And again, they ask, who is this? Who, this is not our son. This isn't our brother. This is somebody else. We don't recognize this guy. He's so happy, so energized. And so he's like, I can't tell you guys yet, but I'm so excited. I met somebody. I'm excited. And it's maybe if things go well, I'll introduce you. But right now, I'm just taking it slow with her. Her family's brand new in the town. She's new. I don't want to scare her off, you know? And they're like, okay. And so he picked her up, and they enjoyed a beautiful night. Again, just like at the cafe, what felt like minutes was only hours, or what felt like minutes was hours. And as they danced in each other's arms and held each other tight, everything around them was slow motion. Everything stopped, and it was just them in their own little world, dancing. And as the music played and played and played, until finally even the music faded away, and it was just them. You know, even as the lights came on and the janitor is sweeping away the paper and the cups and the bottles that were scattered all across from a crazy night, a busy night, a rowdy night, but for them, a lovely evening where two became one and a love was forged. A beautiful love, a love that can be, you know, taken, shaken, or rattled. It was their love. It was a powerful love, you know. Even though it was just beginning, he knew, and she knew that they were meant to be. Although they were scared to tell, they were scared. They kept it to themselves. Again, Joe had suffered through many relationships of it like this before. He was a sucker for love, as they would say. He was one to fall easily into love, but very hard to fall out of love. She suffered through a lot of tough relationships, relationships with men who would use her and take advantage of her kindness, take advantage of her hospitality, and left her broken and brokenhearted. And she didn't want that, so she wanted to take it slow. But their passion was too strong, and again, what felt like minutes was hours, and what felt like hours ended up being the entire weekend. And they couldn't get enough of each other. Every waking minute that weekend was with each other. Soon as he woke up, he was off to see her. And then they were touring the city. He was showing her the hot spots, the little nooks and crannies, places that, you know, maybe some, even the locals didn't know, but only he knew. He even took her up into the shafts. You know, he lowered her down into the shafts there. He showed her where his family had been making a living since the 1930s. And he showed her, hey, this is where it all began. And he even did something he had never done before anyone before. He crushed a coal, and out came a diamond. And he gave her, it was a small diamond, not a fancy diamond. It was just an uncut one, very tiny. It looked like a fingernail. The size, smaller than a fingernail. And he gave it to her, said, this is for you. Like our love, it's like our love's a coal. With hard work and determination, I want to make it a diamond that shines bright, that I can show the whole world that you're mine, and that you belong to me, and that I belong to you, and that we can shine bright together. And so from that moment forward, Joe and Tiffany were one, and their love kept getting stronger and stronger, and it felt like it would never end. He fell in love with her, she fell in love with him. But little did they know that their love would be taking a turn to something more darker than they both could even imagine. All right, guys, we are going to get into the part that you guys have all been waiting for, the
the next chapter in A Minor Inconvenience. So we're to pick up. John was, you know, contemplating his next steps. Him and his wife, you know, they had some decisions to make, some decisions that weren't going to be easy, and that weren't going to be, you know, maybe great in the beginning, or where they will maybe would pay off dividends in the beginning, but in the long run would be what would be perfect for him. And so, you know, he, knowing his life, wasn't easy, you know, growing up in a, you know, being in such a big family that was one of the core of the Colesville, the mining community, that was the threat of that community. And for what happened, it was quite shocking to discover some of the secrets of his family that he didn't even know existed, that put him on edge, and put him on a defensive position that he wasn't quite ready to take on. And so that pressure, along with a few other things, were, you know, mounting, where he made that tough decision to leave Colesville and start a new life, him and his family. Somewhere far, far away, their plan was to drive as far as they could drive until the gas ran out of the car, and then they would set up roots there. And so as soon as they were, you know, packing their things, their belongings, you know, saying their cheerful goodbyes, you know, family saw them, please, 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 John, don't leave us. Please stay. Stay, we need you here. But he knew it was the right decision. He knew that, you know, time heals all wounds, and that maybe by him doing this, by leaving, that it could be the start of something, you know, and that maybe other family members, especially his father, would follow suit. But he knew the answer. He knew that wasn't going to be the case. He knew that that wasn't going to happen at all. And so him, his wife, their kids, they packed up and they drove. They flipped the coin, which direction they would go first between north and south. Heads was going to be north, south was going to be tails, and of course it was heads. So they started heading north from Colesville. They started going through Indiana, going through Kentucky, and then as soon as they got towards the edge of the Kentucky-Ohio border, they stopped to fill up again some gas. And then they decided to coin flip again, if they were going to go west or east. So they flipped the coin. Tails was west, heads was east. And so the coin landed on tails, so they went east, which, as you know, in probability, is very unlikely, very rare that you'll do two tails. Usually it's a 50-50, maybe I think 52-48%, I read somewhere, but the probability of it being tails. But usually in old mythology, two tails meant a sign of good luck and prosperity and good fortune. And John, knowing the miner community, that was where that myth was from, he knew that was a good thing. So they started heading east on the Ohio-Kentucky border. They got right, just kept going east. They got right to where the border with New York and New Hampshire was, in Vermont, that area, that little small pocket. And so the gas ran out, and so they laid shop there. They put their flag in the ground, so to speak, as they used to say. And so in a small town called Derby, Vermont. And so there's Derby, Maine. Sorry. As a storyteller, I'm going to give you some bad information sometimes, so just know that also proves that I'm doing the story single take from the top of my head, so that will give you a little proof of that too. So I'm doing this as I go. So they set up in Derby, the city, and Derby It used to be an old racing town. They would race and raise pedigree horses. A lot of horses that would go on to win major races like the Kentucky Derby, the Belmont, Santa Ana, out west of California. So as they were driving into town, they saw a lot of littered, old, abandoned stables. And so they set up shop. And so, and you know, no one has... as industrious as Jonathan was, he knew that he could go and maybe, you know, reinvent himself as a stable man, you know, literally and figuratively, you know, build, you know, rebuilding these stables, maybe, you know, get into the horse business. You know, he figured, hey, this could be a great way, it could be a great opportunity to learn something new. And so he started, you know, working on that. So he started actually rebuilding these stables. Ones that had been laying dormant, he offered to build them up if he could. If once he built them up, he would be able to keep them. And so, you know, Derby, desperate for somebody that would be able to kind of revitalize the town and make it look beautiful, agreed to those terms. So John went to work, and he little by little, ended up, you know, building up all these different, you know, stables. So 90 days in, he has a couple of the biggest stables in Derby built up, refurbished, looking great, and of course now having full ownership of them, you know, and being new, he didn't know who to turn to. And so one day during Sunday service, he asked his pastor, hey, who are some good people that can help me out? And so he was pointed in the direction of a gentleman named Gino Torelli. And Gino Torelli, unbeknownst to Jonathan, was once one of the major crime bosses out of the New York Syndicate for the Gotti family. But due to the mafia wars and the crackdown of the mafia in New York in the late 80s and early 90s, Gino fled to Derby under an alias name, you know, and under a different name. He was going by Thomas Ford. And so because of that, you know, he was known as Tommy locally, affectionately, and was a great purveyor in the community, helped revitalize before Jonathan came in. A lot of downtown. Used some of his old mob money that no one knew. It wasn't mob money. He knew he was industrious. Knew he did construction. And so he helped build, you know, where Jonathan couldn't. So he spoke to Jonathan about, you know, working together. Jonathan revitalizing the stables. Him helping Tommy out with the rest of some of the buildings, and that they would try to bring in people disenfranchised with the other big cities like Boston or Baltimore or New York into Derby, into starting a second chance, just like, you know, they both did. And so their kindred spirits being united, being, you know, both, you know, kicked out of their homes and for separate but equally controversial reasons. And so they developed an unlikely friendship, a friendship that would carry them for quite some time, and would prove to be a boon for both. You know, Jonathan having a former, you know, mob boss that, you know, was used to getting his hands dirty on his side, and Tommy having somebody, you know, literally clean to help him out, to make sure that he was on the straight and narrow, and together they would make a really great team. And come to turn Boone around, and, you know, turn Derby around into one of the best cities out there. And so, and that is where our story for now will conclude. We will pick it up here shortly. I just want to give you guys a little update on the story, and a new idea. So where should we go? Leave me a voice message if you want. Also want to shout out, guys, three new fans here. I told them I would, Actually, I told my buddy that I would, so I want to give them a quick shout-out at the end of the story. So, again, so these are my fans, guys. So I want to say shout-out to Peyton Gray, Brandon Banks, and Noah Thurlow, man. They are all from Lehigh, Utah, so they're the ones who are kickstarting this. They're the ones who wanted me to do the podcast. They were been waiting on pens and needles for the story. Like, my buddy was like, "Scott, you got to record the story. You got to record the story." So this is for them and for everybody else has been waiting for. So Brandon, Peyton, Noah, thank you so much for your enthusiasm, man, to get the story going. So you are the reasons I finally was able to record this. So I want to give you guys a quick shout-out towards the end of this, and we will pick up the story here soon. So until then, so every podcast moving forward, when I do the story, we're going to do it piece by piece. So you'll hear the intro, the original beginning, this part, and then we'll just do it piece by piece. Hopefully not as bad as George R. Martin. It's not going to be like 40 years where we get fire and ice, but we'll get the story to you guys soon. So this is just a update for that. So what happens? Is Jonathan and Tommy / Gina, are they going to paint the town red with revenge in Derby? Or are they going to make Derby such a thriving city that other people will want to come in and forget their past and work with them? Or is there something even more sinister, secrets that Derby's been hiding that no one knew about that will tie in with Gino / Tommy and Jonathan? You'll have to come find out soon. All right, guys, so there you go. We're continuing the saga for a minor inconvenience. Finally got to it, so I apologize for everybody that's been waiting on that. And for all my few fans, man, appreciate it so much. Your patience, you're actually the ones who kickstarted that, dude. So, again, Peyton, Brandon, Noah, guys, you're awesome, and my buddy. Because I appreciate you guys so much kicking me in the butt to do that. So hopefully that will be... Hopefully you like it, you know, I'm hoping. A few other things, guys. So the economy's going good. And so if you guys want to, I got shows coming up next. So next Thursday, on the 18th of July, I'm going back and I'm doing This Week Sucks Tonight, basically where they roast me. So it's going to be fun, dude. It's going to... Now that I kind of know the deal of that show, I'm basically just going to go and just... kind of mess with, antagonize them a little bit, and so I'll put. Usually, I think they live feed it. So if you're on Instagram, follow This Week Sucks Tonight, Facebook their page, like them. You'll see me on there. I'll record, you know, of course, my side too. And then gonna get my car back finally, which is awesome. I'm excited about that. Like I just said in my intro, that's good. So this is a laundry day for me. So I got to go back, go grab my laundry. It's probably getting lonely, probably wondering if I'm abandoning it, like my responsibilities. So I'm going to go get through my laundry. Just wanted to record that story for everybody, just for Peyton, Brandon, Noah. I know you guys have been waiting, so thank you so much again for following me. And likewise, man, if you like the podcast, man, follow me. We appreciate it. We appreciate everybody who listens to the podcast when I sporadically record it. So... I'll try to do a little bit more, maybe a little more often. Maybe we'll do daily, especially with this the story. And I like where we're going, man. Little hooks and turns, and we'll see where that goes. So again, thank you guys so much for being patient with me with that. Again, as always, you can become fans of the website with my videos, my music, greatweightmedia.com. Again, follow us on Instagram at greatweightmedia. I do some goofy... stories on there. My Instagram stories are on point, are goofy, are just on brand, as people would say. I don't know, man. I don't really follow that. I just kind of have fun with it. You can also follow us on Facebook, man. Facebook.com/GreatWeightPodcast, man. So I got to share this on there. As always, you can find us everywhere. Anchor's the main one, but again, every place you find podcasts, you're going to find this guy. So, you know, thank you so much for being patient. Again, my biggest fans, Peyton, Brandon, Noah, because that minor convenience is for you guys. Without your
man fandom for it, man, without liking it, I probably wouldn't have kept up with it. In fact, I was going to shelve it until I got that text message. So I really appreciate your help a lot. So thank you so much for re-inspiring me to continue the story, and we'll take it from there. Again, this is Scotty Waite. Signing off, man. You all have a great rest of your weekend. Whatever that may be doing, whether that's school. Well, no, it's summertime. Yeah, there's no school right now. Unless you're in summer school, and that's bad. Don't ever be in summer school. That means you're goofing off during the fall. You don't ever want to goof off during the fall. You ball in the fall, have fun in the summertime, dude. That's that fun in the sun. That's the phrase. Again, want to shout out some people. State Farm with my insurance, help me out with that. Getting my new car insured, they give me a great rate on that. I want to shout out Alive Shoes. I'm working on a collaboration with the Swag Squad Shoes. If you've seen those, the post is on Instagram. There's a link on there. Go ahead and pre-order a couple of those pairs, and pre-order those, and then we can send those out to you. I do have discount codes. If you're interested, I can sign up on the website, on my greatweightmedia.com website. Become a fan. I'll send you a code for like $30 off the shoes. And then also want to thank you, the fans, that keep this podcast going. Tell your friends to listen. Become subscribers, and we will we'll take it over little by little, man. We'll keep making it fun, and we'll keep doing some good stuff. So, again, thank you so much for being great fans of ours, and especially mine. Again, this is Scotty Waite with the Great Waite Podcast. Signing off until next time, and have a great weekend. Be good to each other. Be kind, and God bless you all. Bye.